We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and joining us is the author of a book called More Than Race. He's the director of the Center for Justice Research at Texas Southern University and author and editor of that book, Dr. Howard Henderson. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Hey, listen, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate it. So let's talk a little bit about what your group is doing, Center for Justice Research, and created the National Police Reform Advisory Group. And you use, different data points to put together a plan to help improve police-community relations. And I'm hoping you can kind of describe the things that you're doing.
Yeah. Again, thanks so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about this advisory group that we put together. The focus is to be able to provide evidence-based solutions for reforming American policing. We recognized that there needed to be a nonpartisan group that was able to look at these issues from an as objective position as possible, because we recognized that politics was going to get in the way and kind of muddy the waters a little bit. So we want to be able to provide all sides, all entities, the research that's necessary to make the most evidence-based decision.
Okay. So what type of research did you look into? What are those data points that you use to drive your opinion on it?
Well, you know, first of all, we recognize that, you know, now 70% of Americans are now calling for widespread criminal justice and police reform. We also recognize that there is a significant relationship between a police officer's education and their likelihood of being involved in use of force cases. We also understand that a police officer's education makes them more likely to accept community policing. So there are various data points that most people aren't aware of that would help us make better decisions about how we move forward and improve police-community relations and ultimately hold them more accountable and be more transparent throughout the process.
It sounds like some of those data points actually go back into the training of the police officer itself. So are you finding that the more training a police officer has, the more active training that they have throughout the course of their career, the less likely they are to have complaints or at least have conflicts where there would be issues on their record?
Well, what we're finding in reality is that training is only one piece of it. What we're suggesting is that they need to go back and actually reexamine the entire hiring process. There are decision points along at every point along the way that will help them identify those officers that have been most suited for American policing in the 21st century. Policing, you know, has a storied history, particularly when it comes to dealing with minorities. And so we're going to have to figure out how we improve the relationship. And we argue that the research should be the way that we move forward.
Well, that's interesting. So when it comes to people that apply and they go through the police force, they go through the training, are you saying they should be more selective, the people that they move forward? And that would be the first basis point in order to try to change some of the way policing is done.
Yeah, I think it's the very first decision point, because what is happening is that, you know, 30% of police officers have college degrees. And that seems counterintuitive because, you know, we have a system where we require college degrees for probation officers. We require college degrees for parole officers, but we don't require college degrees police officer, and most people don't understand that. But the research has been very clear about that. So we have a culture which we've overlooked some obvious solutions that we can implement at the very early stages.
Well, that's interesting. So if you do have a college education, so that does that necessarily give you a good indication of how they will be as a police officer? Or is there more important data points that you look at when it comes to other parts of, you know, a well-rounded training?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, that's just one indicator. It doesn't mean that if you have a college degree, you're going to be a better police officer. We're talking in terms of likelihoods. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is raise the standards of American policing to be where they are at the federal and the state level. If you look around the country, the federal government requires college degrees. Most state agencies require college degrees. But the lower-level officer who actually has more interaction with the community is less likely to have a college degree. That's just one position. We're talking about a host of policies that can be implemented, such as getting rid of chokeholds, how we can adequately deal with qualified immunity, because there's so much conversation in this space. We want to make sure that we are able to tease through the noise and provide best solutions for solving this problem.
You know, and that's the interesting part about this, the nonpartisan approach to it, because even just recently there was a proposal that was put together by Senator Scott, and he made a statement after when they couldn't get any sort of agreement on this when it came to changing in policing. So how can anyone look at this in a nonpartisan way anymore? Because it seems like everything's so politically motivated.
Well, I think that, you know, the American people have an expectation. You know, after seeing the recent George Floyd murder on video, the American people began to take to the streets. The research tells us that over 25 million Americans have protested in the streets, which is unprecedented since the Civil Rights Movement, if we think about the number of people who protested around the country in all 50 states. The American people are looking at this from a very serious level, and that is the police officers should be held to a higher standard. The politicians may look at this another way, but the American people are expecting politicians to govern their decisions according to the expectations of society. So we have a disconnect at this point. We want to make sure that everyone has the information that they need to hold everyone accountable.
Hmm. You know, did you get a chance to look at the bill that they put together, the Republicans put together through Senator Tim Scott last month?
No, yes. And so what we're doing, and let me give you an idea of how we're doing this. We're spending the first 8 weeks just critically examining all the bills that have been proposed by the Republicans, by the Democrats, the executive order that's been signed by President Trump. And we found other proposals that have existed around the country, like fringe groups, advocacy groups. And we're looking at those to figure out where do they have points of agreement and where do they not. And so we're going to come back out and say, listen, here are the top 20, top 15 proposed policies on either side of the political debate. Here's low-hanging fruit where you guys can agree on and pass and get those out of the way so you can spend time on those more difficult decisions. As I said earlier, it's qualified immunity. Because we got to be able to tease through the politics. As you stated, it's going to get murky. But you need someone in that space to be able to lay out what the objectives and the agenda should be and how we best get there. We believe the best way to get there is through evidence and implementation of proven programming.
Oh, interesting. Let's talk a little bit more about that. And More Than Race is the book. Is this what you cover in the book, or is the research separate from the book, and the book is more or less just talking about generally the underlying problem?
Well, so the book deals with the underlying problem. I came up with the idea for the book while teaching at a university, predominantly white institution, and I recognized that there was a misunderstanding of the historical legacy of American policing with various ethnic and racial groups around the country. And I thought that the best way to teach people how to understand the African-American experience is to go back and look at other ethnic group experiences with policing several hundred years ago. And so through that experience, they were able to connect because they were able to empathize and see themselves in that relationship.
Hmm, interesting. Well, I want to ask you about some of the things that come up in the headlines after the break, if you don't mind holding on.
Yeah, please do. Please.
So he's the author and editor of a book called More Than Race, Doing the Research, and he's also director of the Center for Justice Research at Texas Southern University. Dr. Howard Henderson's going to join us after the break. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Overnight America continues with author Dr. Howard Henderson, director of the Center for Justice Research, Texas Southern University, in the book More Than Race, talking about changes that could be made in order to help the community police relations. Thank you so much for hanging on and being with us tonight.
And listen, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Great conversation.
Well, I want to ask you about a couple of the things that seem to be grabbing headlines, and one of the biggest ones is about defunding the police. You saw in New York City, they talk about shifting $1 billion away from police, a lot of other large metropolitan cities as well, talking about how they want to handle policing, staffing, funding, things like that, instantly jumping on after some of the protests and moving away from that. And that's something that's also very divisive. I'm curious how, statistically, when you look at defunding the police, what you think would happen there, and if you think it's a good idea.
You know, I think it's a great conversation to have because, you know, for one of the first times in modern history, we're discussing the allocation of resources in American policing, which we typically don't have a public discussion about. I think that there is a camp that makes a legitimate argument for defunding the police because they want to create something else. There's another camp that says that that's ludicrous and that we need to reallocate resources in a better manner. I think somewhere in between those two points, I think, is the best approach. But I think that something has to be done because I think that, as you've seen, there are some individuals in American policing that don't seem to understand that we are in a democracy. And I think that we've created a culture that has been unable to autocorrect itself. And so there needs to be the creation of something new or the reallocation of services. But I think the reallocation is probably the easier path. But I know that there are going to be people who are going to fight for defunding. I'm just not sure if America is ready to have a defunding conversation. But I think they're more amenable to the whole notion of restructuring and reallocating resources.
You know, I guess practically speaking, when you hear about allocating money to other departments, other resources, it makes me wonder, I guess, when you look at the statistics, are police departments historically overfunded? Because taking away from something that, to me, I have the impression they're underfunded to begin with. Like here in St. Louis, I mean, we've been trying to fill police positions and they've been having the hardest time doing it. They're approved, and I think there's still about 150 police officers down from the approved level they have. Part of it's funding, part of it is trying to recruit people, and they still can't find enough police officers to want to come and serve in the city because it's not an easy job. So I think about the lack of resources that some departments have and then the threat of even taking more resources away, what that would do for the community that desperately need the police in those communities.
Yeah, I think, you know, the reality of it is we don't know on a local level, which is what we argue for, that the criminal justice and police reform needs to be a bottom-up approach where we deal with this in our local communities and work our way up, and the federal government should help provide some sort of standards across the board. But when you think about police resources, there is a fine line between having enough and having too many. We know that there are segments of the population or the communities that need more than others. But I think that a true analysis of need, a true needs assessment of American policing is what we really need to figure out where the saturation point is, where we have too many or not enough. But most of us around the country, it's very difficult for us to say how many police officers we actually need to be able to maintain public safety. Keep in mind that most of the police work is not crime related at all. And so there are those people who are arguing for us hiring more social work oriented personnel other than police. And so that debate goes back and forth. If you talk to police, they're going to say they need more resources and they justify that. If you talk to the communities, they're going to say they need more resources. They need more officers to focus on certain more social justice oriented approaches. But I think it's a good, healthy debate to have, and I'm glad that we're having it, actually.
So the other thing that people bring up is qualified immunity. It seems to be a sticking point for some of the different proposals. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that and if police should have that protection.
Yeah, I saw where Tim Scott recently said that that's not even an issue for them to put on the table. I think it would be best for them to put that on the table and have a discussion about it, because I think in a democracy, discussions are what we do best. I think that, you know, to totally get rid of qualified immunity would be a huge step. I'm not sure if that would be the best step, but I think that to have a conversation about whether or not we're going to get rid of it is what we need. But I do think that we can agree somewhere in the middle. I think that there's an opportunity for us to identify the types of behaviors that should not be protected by qualified immunity, and I think we begin there.
So when you say behaviors not protected by that, what comes to mind?
You know, certain types of chokeholds, knee to the neck, right? I think we can all see videos of certain behaviors, and we can pick which ones should not be protected. I think that's where we need to be, because, you know, this blanket get rid of in either direction or keep, it's not tenable at the moment. I think the American people are now understand enough about qualified immunity to know that there are some cases where they should not exist. But the other issue that we have to deal with, and the biggest elephant in the room, I think, are police unions. And that's one that's sweeping the country, because people did not understand the power that they had in American policing. And talking to enough police officers, they'll tell you that the police unions have a lot of power, and they are in between this place between accountability and transparency of American policing.
Do you think that is the biggest issue that needs to be addressed first?
If I had to say first, I think it would be one of those. I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think the police union piece is a huge piece, because it's in the way of a true conversation about police accountability. And until we put that on the table, as in everything else, we're not going to be able to get to the root of this problem. We've been here before, right? If you think back to Rodney King, we were here. We will be here again if we don't address these issues right now.
So why do you think police shouldn't have union representation?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm saying they should not have union representation. What I'm saying is I think there are certain behaviors, just like I stated with qualified immunity, there are certain behaviors that they should not be able to get in the way of an individual being disciplined for, because it slows up the process. The research tells us that in those places where you have strong unions, you also have more citizen complaints of police. And so we understand all of these facts. I think that this is a moment for us to have a conversation about how we move policing into the 21st century, and all conversations should be on the table.
Cool. And I'm also talking about data points. We always have the discussion about body cameras and having those. We've had the debate here in St. Louis for a while, ever since I moved here 3.5 years ago now. They've been talking about it. Finally, they decided to put it in. I think police body cameras are going to be the thing that really helps determine the right and wrong in a lot of different situations where there's discrepancy. Do you think there should be pretty much a body camera on every police officer?
I think so. I think that police officers, if they don't understand, now they will understand that they also protect them as well, because I think there are some cases where they need the body camera. I think the research has been very clear on the impact of body cameras for nothing other than to give some safety and security to those individuals that are involved in the interaction. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with having more evidence for us to review to make sure we can tell what really happened, the truth of it all. I think a lot of people are just more concerned about making sure we're getting a factual representation of what's happening so we can have something to lay out there. Because, you know, a lot of times we get caught up in some of the stories, and then 24 hours later we find out it's a completely different story. Our first impression was wrong, or more evidence comes out, and we were so quick to base it on our biases either way, as opposed to what the facts are of the situation. I think most people just want to have justice served, regardless if it was with the police officer or if it was with the suspect or whoever may be involved with it. They just want the right thing to happen. And the problem that we run into is that there's so much disagreements that go on back and forth that we get our eye off of the focus of what the truth of the matter is. And, man, if we can get closer to that, that'll solve a lot of our issues.
Yeah, I think, you know, the body cameras help us do that because, you know, we're able to see for ourselves. It's no he said, she said conversation. It essentially allows us to see what's happening in a space that we normally only got one person's word against the other. And so we essentially play the jury in real time. I think that Americans have evolved and we now understand that, you know, a lot of the stories and experiences that minorities have expressed over the last couple hundred years, some of those, in fact, have been true and have been corroborated by video. I think that we're moving into a new space where we're looking for a country that protects everyone, regardless of race, class, gender, sexual orientation. And I think that policing is just one of those places where we're going to see more change. And I think it's just a first step in that direction.
So just again, I know you're putting together this evidence, you're looking at data points and you're putting recommendations together. Are they printed somewhere where people could look at some of your recommendations?
Yeah, we're going to have the first one will be out next week. I'll actually share a copy with that with you. We're looking at chokeholds and what the position should be on chokeholds. Again, we chose chokeholds because I think both sides agree that something has to be done with those. I think it's low-hanging fruit. I think it's better for us to get off the table those issues that we agree on. And so we want to be methodical in how we approach it, but we'll share that with you and your readers and your listeners as well.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Your book is More Than Race, by the way. Where can people find that?
You can actually find it on Amazon. It's pretty much most book carriers will sell a copy of that. Again, that book is designed for people to understand how we're all connected to issues of disparity in criminal justice.
Dr. Howard Henderson, I got to say, I'm glad that you joined us here live tonight on KMOX. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you so much. I'd love to come back and have a conversation with you about what we write up in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, actually, let's do that. I would really enjoy that. So we'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah.
He's the director of the Center for Justice Research at Texas Southern University. You can look up his book, More Than Race, on Amazon. And that paper will be out here soon, and we hope to bring it back on. Dr. Howard Henderson joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line. We're going to take a look at your weather coming up in a moment and a few other things going on. If you want to react to that, you can. If there's something you heard in there you want to say, you got your say, 314-436-7900 on Overnight America KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Here it is, Overnight America. A text message came in that said, Hamilton is original and thought-provoking. People would have freaked out 60 years ago. We as a country are in a better place than then. Enjoyed it. My nephew-in-law portrays Thomas Jefferson on Broadway. That's pretty cool. Yeah, one of the things you'll notice is that, of course, when you're doing a musical and you have some artistic freedom, so obviously it's people that are portraying like Jefferson and Madison, they're not white, and that's not a problem or anything. It's just one of the things. It's not like a point that's meant to be, like, you know, 100% accurate in that sense. But man, some of the things they bring up in the song form and whatnot, It's interesting, too, the King from England comes out and he's dressed up and he does his songs. I have seen some of those. Those are very funny moments with all of it. It just all comes together so well. The whole thing comes together so well. And the reason I brought that thing up before is because some people over the weekend were trying to make a hassle to Hamilton saying, you know, how could you portray slave owners and be African-American yourself and be a Jefferson or do this or do that? And everyone was getting all upset about it. And as it turns out, I was watching some different reports on that, and there was very few people that were actually upset about it. It was a lot of anonymous accounts. So you go back and you look at it and you say, all right, so this is a bunch of nothing that some people brought up in out of the absurdity of it all. Someone took it seriously and decided to report on it, and next thing you know, other people are spreading it. It's just so dumb the way things get propagated on social media anymore. I'd still prefer this song over them all when it comes to Hamilton.
And I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country and young, scrappy and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
I still don't know the original songs, but I know that one's pretty popular. You know, I got to say, going from Dr. Howard Henderson to playing a little more Weird Al, that was a weird transition. You know, an interesting conversation with him, trying to look at some of the data points in policing. What exactly should we be looking at? What's the best thing that we should be looking at? What are the things we actually agree on? Do you have any reaction to that interview? 314-436-7900. I would like to hear from you because this conversation still continues to get heated, mostly because a lot of the activists that are out there, there are so many different activists that go out and they make themselves this sort of, authoritative figure when they're really not. And they just want a million different things, but no one knows what the purpose of what they want. And they're moved in a bunch of different directions. So, you know, for example, Terry Crews brings this up in an interview with CNN's Don Lemon. Maybe I'll play some clips from that. Let me bring that up real quick, because that's getting a lot of people talking online. Terry Crews makes his argument because he came out and said a couple of different things regarding All Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. And basically what he said was, we don't want to turn Black Lives Matter into Black Lives Supremacy. I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly the tweet. But he puts that out there and says, we're not treating people as equals when you go out there and you shout people down and you don't talk to them and then you don't take anything else into consideration and all of these things. So you add this sort of supremacy around it. Then are you really trying to advocate for equality? And if that's not what it's about, then what are you doing? If it's not about equality, if there's areas that you see there's a lack of equality. So here's the argument that Terry Crews makes on CNN, and I think you'll kind of get an idea for it. Don Lemon, by the way, does not agree with Terry Crews, and there's one thing Don Lemon says later in the interview that really made me open up my eyes and say, you got to be kidding me. So listen to the argument. This is how it was set up on his show.
Now, I wanted to bring up the fact that, you know, there are some very, very, you know, militant type forces in Black Lives Matter. And what I was issuing was a warning. You know, it's one of those things where I've been a part of different groups, I've been a part of different things, and you see how extremes can really can go far and can go wild. And then when you issue a warning, and when a warning is seen as detrimental to the movement, how can you ever, ever have checks and balances? You know, in the 60s and 70s, airplanes went down all the time. And the reason they found out why they did was because the pilots could never be questioned. And when you have the leaders of the Black Lives Movement who are now talking about, you know, if we don't get our demands, we're going to burn it down. Other Black people who are talking about working with other whites and other races, they're being viewed as sellouts or called Uncle Toms. You start to understand that you are now, you know, being controlled. You're not being treated as loved. You're actually being controlled. Someone wants to control the narrative. And I viewed it as a very, very dangerous self-righteousness that was developing that, you know, that really viewed themselves as better. It was almost a supremacist move.
Let me jump
where
in,
where they viewed that their Black lives mattered a lot more than mine.
Wow. And he really lays it out there and was not afraid to say it. And I got to say, I've always liked Terry Crews for multiple reasons. I've talked about him on the show many times. And leading into this, this has got a lot of people upset. And I got to say, he has seen some of the most vile comments thrown his way because he wanted to speak out on the things that he saw were harmful, derogatory, and just plain destructive inside some of these movements. And part of the point he makes is that you can come up with a demand and say, hey, if you don't meet our demand, we're going to burn things down. What kind of way is that? Who's to say that you can't have conversations about things? And he said it's turning into a supremacy, as in it has to be some sort of we're not equal. There's no equality there if there's some sort of feeling of supremacy. And that's part of the problem, too. 314-436-7900. What I'm going to do is play a couple of other clips from the CNN interview after the break. And there's one thing Don Lemon admits to that really is eye-opening, and it goes exactly back to the grievance that Terry Crews brought up to begin with, and it really proves his point. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts, michaelsflooringoutlet.com.
And Overnight America continues. I played a clip from Terry Crews right before the break, and we got some calls, but we'll go to those in just a minute. I wanted to wrap up this real quick because this is more of the point that Terry Crews was trying to make.
When you look in the city of Chicago, there are 9 children who died by gun violence, by black-on-black gun violence, from June 20th all the way to today. And you're talking about even with the Atlanta child murders, there were 28 kids who died in 2 years. You're talking about a month, and you have 9 black kids. And the Black Lives Matter movement has said nothing about this.
What does that have
thing.
To do with equality, though, Terry? I don't understand what that has to do with equality, because listen, there's crime. There are people in those communities those people aren't just being nonchalant about gun violence. I lived in Chicago. There are many people who are working in those communities to try to get rid of the gun violence. The gun culture in this country is prevalent, but I don't understand what that has to do with a movement that's for equality for black people. It's not mutually exclusive that if you care about equality for black people, that somehow you're going to stop random violence or, unfortunately, kids from being shot. It just seems like apples and oranges.
You know, it's not that way. You know, this is the thing, Don. You know, black people need to hold other black people accountable. I said this the same thing. This is the Black America's version of the Me Too movement. If anything is going to change, we ourselves need to look at our own communities and look at each other and say, this thing cannot go down.
All right, so I'm going to stop it there because I want to play Don Lemon's response to that real quick, and I want you to pay very close attention to how he frames this. Now, keep in mind, Terry Crews' message is we want equality. We should be coming at this as an equality, not supremacy, equality. Listen to how Don Lemon puts it. Oh, here we go.
I have a skin as tough as an armadillo because of what I do, and I think maybe you should adapt that. But here's what I have to say.
Roll your eyes immediately. He's like, oh, my skin's so thick. Now, keep in mind, when he came to St. Louis, he was wearing a $500 or $600 Gucci scarf to a riot. Oh, please. Oh, I'm so tough. All right, let me just point that absurdity out, but let's continue.
The Black Lives Matter movement was started because it was talking about police brutality. If you want an all Black Lives Matter movement that talks about gun violence in communities, including, you know, black communities, then start that movement with that name. But that's not what Black Lives Matter is about. It's not an all-encompassing. So if you're talking about, if someone started a movement that said cancer matters.
All right, I'm just going to stop it there. Did you catch what he said? Listen again.
Then start that movement with that name. But that's not what Black Lives Matter is about. It's not an all-encompassing.
All right, so Black Lives Matter is not all-encompassing, meaning that it's not about all black lives. It's not all encompassing. It's only about some. And it plays exactly back to what Terry Crews said. It's turned into a supremacy. It's turned into you can't even to have a conversation about it, because you're prioritizing and you're picking and choosing relative to what your causes are, whose life is valuable and whose life is not. His point is that equality means everyone's life is valuable. Good for Terry Crews to stand up and the true colors of Don Lemon come out. It's not about equality to him. 314-436-7900. We were talking a little bit earlier in the show about policing and looking at data and how that could be changed with Dr. Howard Henderson. I think that's what George is calling in on. Welcome to Overnight America, George.
When it comes to the body cams over the last couple of months, whether it be Atlanta to Chicago to Minneapolis, where uniforms have actually turned their body cams off and been fired for turning them off. They were told you will not be turning them off. If so, you all be subject to not reporting in it tomorrow. Chicago, I think it was the mayor or district attorney, they went up to the union and said, we want all the files on all the uniforms in Chicago for the last 5 years. And the union said no. Mm-hmm. And the mayor and prosecuting attorney said, why not? We want to know what there is in this uniform, good or bad. And the uniform or the union said no, which tells you something right then and there.
Now, what does that tell you? No, you tell me, what does it tell you?
It tells you that the union wants to protect every uniform there is within its city or precinct. And the union will decide on its own what the union wants to do with that respective individual.
Okay.
The same
you don't
thing
think it has
saw.
Anything to do with due process?
I'm sorry?
You don't think it may have something to do with due process?
Let's go back to George Floyd for a moment. When the uniform looked directly at you in the camera, he was basically saying to you, looking at the camera, looking at him, I'm covered by the union. I can virtually do anything I want, and until the union decides my fate, I'm free to do what I want. Now, as I say that, this hasn't happened in the last 10 years. So, as I was saying to a friend of mine here in Kansas City, the guy that trained these uniforms were taught by another age group that taught them how they respond and react to a circumstance. So when you and I saw the situation in Atlanta where the individual managed to get himself out of a three-man uniform circus and started to run, you actually heard that uniform that was arrogant enough to shoot three rounds, two of which hit this individual, eventually say, I got him. That was his way of saying, nobody's going to get out of my command. Nobody's going to get out of my grasp.
Wow, have a wonderful ability to read minds, because you're doing an excellent job of it. Have you considered maybe a career in being a psychic? And that's the only way you'd be able to determine that.
No, I just see what I see on TV like you do, and I hear the same, what I hear what you do on from a audio standpoint. Why would anybody verbally say out, other than hitting somebody with two rounds, standing
the guy? Maybe to inform the other police officers that the person was struck, that could be part of it. I'm going to talk more about this after the break. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.